Hey, do you remember What About Bob? Hello, and welcome to Hey, Do You Remember? A show where we reminisce about a movie or TV series we grew up with, then take off the rose-tinted glasses to see how it holds up. I'm Chris.
I'm Donna.
And I'm Carlos.
And today we're revisiting What About Bob? Bill Murray stars as the titular character in this 1991 comedy, which pairs him with Richard Dreyfuss and reunites him with director Frank Oz, whom he had previously worked with on the Little Shop of Horrors remake. Initially, Oz was interested in casting Woody Allen in the role of Dr. Leo Marvin, an egotistical psychiatrist who's eventually driven mad by one of his patients. And if everything had worked out as originally planned, it would not have been Murray tormenting him, but Robin Williams instead. By the time cameras rolled, however, Williams was all booked up with other projects, and Allen ultimately passed. So while it might be tempting to daydream about what that version of the film would have looked like, it's also nearly impossible to imagine a more hilariously combustible dynamic than the one Murray and Dreyfuss bring to the screen. And audiences and critics agreed. What About Bob was a box office hit and received generally positive reviews upon its release in the spring of 1991. Most of the praise was directed at the two leads, who many felt elevated a fairly conventional premise into something a lot more special. It may not have had as big an impact on our childhoods as other films from this era did, and consider for a moment that Oz's previous film was Dirty Rotten Scoundrels and Murray's next was Groundhog Day, but in general, it seems like one of those movies where simply saying the title elicits a smile from most people. And in that spirit, Donna, what do you remember about What About Bob? About.
I remember being stressed out this movie, which troubled me for years because people around me seemed to love it. And I was always like, oh, no. Oh, it's terrible. Like, it really bothered me. And then I saw it again when I was, you know, probably 21 and loved it. Loved it.
I grew up and loved it.
But, yeah, as a child, it really, really bothered me. And I guess it's because, doing some self-analysis, I think it's because I was just really used to liking the protagonist and also following rules. So when someone tells you to leave the room, you leave the room. You don't stay and bother them for an entire movie. So I was on Richard Dreyfuss's side the first time I saw this movie.
Okay.
It didn't occur to me that he was a horrible dick. Like, it didn't register. You know, he was just an adult in a position of authority whose directions were not being heeded by this horrible man who was tormenting him for nearly 2 hours. So I was really stressed out, and like, I think somebody had to get me an ice cream afterwards. I'm like, it's okay.
This is sort of like what happened with Problem Child, isn't it? Like, that one stressed you out too, because it's just like, why doesn't he just behave?
He should just behave. Why isn't everyone just good?
Huh.
But I did a lot of growing up, and
realize no one is good.
Yeah, nobody's really all good, and like, we can all be really horrible dicks.
Once the world's beaten that out of you, this is a fine film.
It sounds like a lesson you learn in The Labyrinth.
Yeah, pretty much.
No one's good.
Huh, well, maybe I'm just taking it for granted that no one's good.
Life isn't fair.
It's not fair. Yeah.
So, Carlos, what about you?
I also was on Richard Dreyfuss's side as a child, and so I also hated Bob as a kid.
Whoa.
Very interesting. Like, I totally agree with every with your childhood.
I
agree with your childhood.
Validated.
I mean, it's the first time that I've probably agreed with your opinion. No, from like when you were at Ghostbusters 2.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
I thought you meant opinion.
I approve of your childhood,
like,
Donna.
Jeez. That's the only good opinion you've ever had. God.
The only smart thing childhood Donna ever said.
Oh,
no, you said smart things. Karen. Anyways,
what's she doing here?
I was the kid who the cartoons where Sylvester just wants to like take a nap and Tweety's messing with him and we root for Tweety. Mm-hmm. I hated those. Mm-hmm. Or like, you know, like somewhat Donald Duck just wants to have a picnic and here comes the bee that's just messing with his day. And we're supposed to like laugh at the bee and laugh at Donald's suffering. Hated those cartoons. Yeah. Like he just wants a picnic.
This is interesting because I think this probably speaks on some level to the kind of children we were. Because I did not have these issues. I love that fucking bee.
Okay, yeah, exactly. The bee who, by the way, had Mickey Mouse's face, really. He was like a mammal.
I was all in on Problem Child.
No.
That's funny.
Yeah, whenever Bugs said, "Ain't I a stinker?" I was usually, like, not on board with Bugs. Like, them.
You guys hated Joy.
It's like, well, now I wish Elmer Fudd would shoot you, Bugs Bunny, because that's where you're at.
You're a rascal.
You are.
You
guys were fans of 1984. Real big on the...
Oh, sure.
Big Brother keeps us safe.
Oh, he's so good to us.
Well...
You know, I'd love some more Soylent Green, if anyone has... Some more Soylent Green.
I had diet Soylent Green today.
Ooh.
You know, go straight to my hips if I don't have the diet. So getting back to What About, there are probably a few movies like this where I was supposed to be rooting for a character and seeing the humor in someone else's general suffering, and that did not happen for me as a child. I didn't see this movie again until we... Other than, like, little clips here and there. Like, I had seen, like, the I'm sailing! I'd seen that, like, a few times. But I hadn't seen the whole movie since, you know, until we decided to review it. So, yeah. What a dick Richard Dreyfuss is.
Yeah.
He deserves everything that comes to him.
Yeah.
Because he's such just an insufferable... penis.
Mm-hmm.
We will not
tolerate that penis. Just, I will not suffer your penis again, Richard Dreyfuss.
I don't suffer penises.
You put that away. Wow. So, I didn't see this movie until I was in high school, but I had been aware of it and whatever. And for a long time, until I was a teenager, I would tend to get this all mixed up with Captain Ron,
yeah,
the Kurt Russell movie. Mm-hmm. Maybe just because of the sailing scene, I don't know. But so for like a long
time...
They're
very similar thematically.
Are they? Because yeah. I've never seen Captain
Ron. They're both about a guy who a patriarch of a family who doesn't like this guy, but his whole family does, and he feels like he's losing his family to this guy.
Okay.
Yeah, hated Captain Ron, by the way.
Oh, no. Yeah. Okay. So, but yeah, I was, when, so when I saw What About Bob for the first time, it was sort of like, where's the pirate? Like, what doesn't one of them have an eye patch?
So when he says, I'm sailing, you're like, oh, here it comes.
You were much more attractive in the trailers. I don't know what to... No, so, this is going to sound so unbelievably super douchey, and I apologize, but so the first time I saw it was, I was at a Fairfield Inn, where my girlfriend and I had gotten a room. Because, yeah, I don't think we... Finding places to have sex was a real dilemma as a teenager. Like, this was, like, I think we take for granted now how easy it is. Like, you don't... This was a real problem. Like, the cars were fine. She had a Jeep. You know, which was better than my car, but sometimes you want to spread out. And so,
Hey, Mom, go away now.
This is great timing because my mother-in-law just asked for the link to this.
My mom just told me the other day, like, you really have to tell me how to download that podcast, in parentheses, for the 20th time. I don't know.
We can prepare parent-approved episodes that are probably about, like, 6 minutes long. If you guys would like. I'm not gonna get weird and graphic here. But the point is, like, this was a real issue when we were teenagers. And so word got around about which hotels were good for this sort of thing. Because some hotels you had to be 21 to check into.
Yeah, which hotels let in teenagers.
Some you had to be 18, and some did not care. The Days Inn off of Ogden, did not care. We had so many parties there. I did so many terrible things there because they just, as long as you didn't burn down the room, like they didn't ask questions.
The Presidential on Harlemish by like Riverside had parties and
So I was doing theater and youth group.
Similar. These
okay.
are
so there was
similar.
Not
so
a
there's
lot
like a lot of
bi
curious experimentation.
Not a lot of nope.
Not happening.
Well,
no
so the only thing
sexual contact.
the only thing that was less than ideal about this sort of situation was that my girlfriends usually had curfews. I did not. Not until I was a senior, actually. Like I get the feeling my mom was very similar to me when she was a teenager, so I had a lot of wiggle room, like certainly more than most of my friends, more than my sisters, definitely. Like for a while, her attitude was just sort of like, as long as the cops don't bring you home, just go live your life. Until I started to, push it. Like she gave me an inch. I asked for a mile. Just really stupid. Like I remember one time I walked in, just strolled in at like 6 a.m. on a school night, and she was waiting for me, and she was like, the hell are you doing? It's 6 a.m. You have to be at school. You have to leave to go to school in an hour and a half. What are you doing? And I was like, so what? And she's like, you have a curfew. And I laughed in her face.
Because you never had one.
No, I laughed and I said, no, I don't. And she stared at me for a second and she goes, you do now. And so that was the end of that.
Burn.
But yeah, but so we get these hotel rooms, and more often than not, you check in at 9 or 10 in the morning, and we'd have to leave at like 10 that night so that I could, get whoever back home on time.
Whoever.
Now it's super douchey. I can't even keep them straight.
I'll tell you what, my youth group is praying for you, sir.
Okay, but that's how I saw this movie for the first time, was like they had HBO at the Fairfield Inn. And I was already in a pretty good mood. It was a nice day out, is what I'm saying. And so, we ordered a pizza, and like, so food was on the way. And I'm a teenager, so sex, pizza, cable. I mean, I'm 30. That still sounds like an amazing day.
That's a good day.
That's a good Sunday.
Yeah. And so HBO, you ever seen What About Bob? No, well, we should watch it. Here you go. And I loved it. I think both of us did. I remember that, just laughing our asses off. And it was just, it was this like amazing day. And I know it sounds super douchey, but I can't help that when I think of this movie, that's the day that I think of. That's how I was introduced to it. And so I also haven't rewatched this a lot. So going into this, there were just a few things that stuck out to me. I remembered the Baby Steps book, of course.
Yeah.
I remembered the puppets.
And I did not.
Oh, you didn't? It's one of my favorite parts. Yeah. And the sailing scene. I remembered Bob's Don't Hassle Me, I'm Local t-shirt for some reason. Oh, and I remembered that this was the first time I was aware of the strategically shaved neck. Like Richard Dreyfuss's beard ends, it just so aggressively ends right here. That always bothered me. That look still kind of bothers me to this day.
It very much aggressively ends on the top end too. Like it's just very like well shaped. There are no stray errant hairs. Kind of like mine. Kind of like my beard.
Just like yours.
Just like mine.
Now that I'm looking at it. Yeah. So I think that's basically it, though. I didn't retain much else. So I knew I liked it, but I wasn't super clear on the details, which is always kind of nice because, just like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, it helped me get more invested in it. Mm-hmm. So, with that said, we just looked at it with fresh eyes. So let's see how What About Bob holds up. There are similar credits to Labyrinth.
Yes.
Yeah.
Only
wow.
Instead of an owl, it's a goldfish, but just black.
Huh.
It's backdrop.
I love.
And it's not shiny. Not as shiny as the owl, which
not as no reflections. I guess ILM hadn't yet discovered.
Can't do fish. Do a hell of a metallic owl, but fish, water.
I think the fish opening credit really is almost as good as an animated credit for me. I was delighted.
I was thinking this would have been, I know our audience is probably so sick of hearing us go on and on about animated credits. This would have been the perfect movie for that.
Great animated credits movie.
It lends itself so.
But you guys, there was a goldfish.
I mean, there was a goldfish. Right. That I'll take that as a close second. But
Gil.
Also true.
I mean,
but that goldfish did not turn into David Bowie.
That's true.
And he really wasn't that important to the rest of the movie.
Swim,
I mean, there are
magic swim.
That, I mean, I would have.
Gil is that Bob. That would have been awesome.
See, yeah.
Gil swims in, turns into Bill Murray, walks out of the lake.
That totally informs a different movie that I would have loved to have seen.
Well, the problem is, you're
I've seen theories online that that Leo and Bob are actually the same person.
No.
Because that's every movie now. Is that and Calvin and Hobbes is Fight Club and blah, blah, blah. You guys have too much time on your hands.
I hate when people...
The person recording a nostalgia podcast. You have too much time on your hands. Let's get into this 25-year-old movie. All right, so we get the intro to Bob. What stuck out to me in this scene, this is super random, is that the first time we see him, he's wearing the short sleeve button down shirt, which I know is a fashion faux pas, thanks to some, like, it was either Us Weekly or some magazine like that, that this is years ago, like when NYPD Blue was only a couple years old, and they like called out Dennis Franz for being like one of the worst dressed characters on TV because those short sleeve dress shirts, blah. And from then on, I have never worn one. I will never wear one. When I see him, I'm like, oh, you didn't get the memo. Like, we don't do faux pas, sir.
They do look kind of sad. Like math teachers wear them.
Mm.
You know, like when they take off their jacket, you're like, oh, honey, put the jacket back on.
I remember one of my first, I think it was my second semester at Columbia, but it was the first day of class, and I had this intro to music class, and the guy walked in, the teacher, the instructor walked in, and he had like shoulder length blonde hair, and he was dressed like he was in his 40s, but he was still dressing like he was in his 20s, but he had like a blazer on. And it looked like he was rock and roll from the waist down, but he was like business, like I'm an instructor from the waist up. And then he makes this big show of, you know, like throwing his blazer off. And he's got
like David Copperfield.
Yeah, like seriously, it was so theatrical. And then he's wearing like a button down shirt, but the sleeves are cut off. And he's not a particularly buff guy or anything, but so it's just this and we all kind of look at each other. All the students like, that was weird, right? Like, this is, like, even for art school, this is kind of weird, right? And I remember this guy standing at the front of the room, and he's like, my name is whatever the fuck his name was, and I'm a composer. I work in the theater scene, and if you're somebody in Chicago theater, you know me.
Oh, wow.
I'm successful. Oh. That's what he said. And I remember one time he was actually doing, he worked on like the Ice Queen or some play at Victory Gardens when we were at 2286. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he would come in all the time. And like now the hair was even thinner on top, but still shoulder length. And he was still rocking the like, the, I'm 22 years old inside look. And I just, I so badly one day as I was handing him his coffee, wanted to be like, I know you. You're successful. You know who he looked like? Viggo the Carpathian. That's almost exactly what he looked like. But more scarves,
more scarves,
more ascots
than Viggo the
Carpathian. Yeah. Oh, okay, anyway, so if you're listening and you're wearing a short sleeve dress shirt
with an ascot.
And ascots, yeah.
Get the fuck off. This is an intervention. What I really liked about Bill Murray in these opening scenes too is like the physicality that he brings to the role is really great. Just the way he walks, his posture, and I'm thinking specifically the way where when he forces himself to leave the apartment, when he has to psych himself up to leave, and then just the way he walks down the hallway is so great. Like, don't touch the walls and da da da. I was really impressed with all that.
Like, stiff upper body and like the almost like bouncing,
cartoonish,
like, timidish walk. Yeah, like cartoonish. It's, yeah.
He's really good. And then we meet Leo, Richard Dreyfuss, he is good in this. My problems with this character have very little to do with Richard Dreyfuss. Mm. I think he's funny. I think he's there are a lot of scenes where he's actually surprisingly subtle, which I know sounds strange because the scenes you probably immediately think of are the more manic, like dialed to 11 scenes. But even when I feel like the script and the direction is pushing him in a more manic, like performance, he still kind of dials it back a little bit.
Yeah.
It's that like ultra professional, like waspy, internalization that he holds on to, like that rage,
right.
But sometimes he just can't go.
That, and those are the best moments where it feels like it's he's keeping it contained, and then shit, it just slips out, and then but right back. Like those are some of the funniest moments. But my memory of this was that he was not so transparently a smarmy dickbag. Like I wasn't with you guys. I wasn't as far as you guys were in terms of like I thought he was the hero of the story, and Bob was like a fucking maniac. Like I wasn't totally there. But my memory of this was that the movie took a more measured approach to both leads, that it was more Felix and Oscar than it was protagonist-antagonist. And so I don't blame Dreyfuss for this at all, but I have to admit that when I read the Woody Allen thing, and you sort of imagine what that movie would have been, because just by nature of having Woody Allen in the role completely changes the movie, that made me sort of wish for a version of this.
He couldn't have played the confidence that Richard Dreyfuss is playing. Like he's
he's
not capable. Yeah.
You know what's weird is it's almost like in this version of the movie, he almost makes more sense as Bob than he does the psychiatrist.
Yeah, he's the one with the
almost want to reverse. And then like and if you
God, that's a different movie.
With Robin Williams also in the mix, if they had reversed that, Robin Williams as the doctor, Woody Allen as the patient, I can see that movie too.
Yeah, so much easier than I can see Woody Allen as the doctor, because
for me, one of the weaker parts of this movie as an adult is the fact that I really remember there being moments where you sympathize with Richard Dreyfuss, where you really feel for him, where you're on his side too. You kind of ping-pong back and forth between them, like, now I'm with Bob, Dreyfuss is being kind of an asshole, and then the next scene, no, you know what, this is getting a little too much. Like, I thought there was a lot more of that. There's hardly any of that.
But see, I think that's where the issue comes in, or at least childhood issue that I had. What are you rooting for in this movie? Because you don't like Richard Dreyfuss, so you're not rooting for things to go well for him.
Right.
But Bob is also encroaching on, like, in being kind of stalkerish. It's like,
it's inappropriate.
This close to being Cape Fear.
That's in my notes. This is, you switch the genre, but this is Cape Fear, which is probably how it played exactly to Donna. This is a horror film.
This is terrible. You won't leave their house.
He's eating dinner with them and they enjoy it.
But the problem with that is really the fact that we're going to skip all the way to the end for a second. Neither of them learn a damn thing.
No.
And that's the big problem is that like, there's no, they don't change each other. Like Bob doesn't help make Richard Dreyfuss more aware of what's really important in his life.
His ending is super dark.
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil the very ending just yet, but it's fucking nuts. I was like, out loud, I was like, what? What? This can't be the ending. How can there only be a minute and a half left? It's crazy.
So what are you rooting for? And I think as a kid, I picked up on that. Like,
okay.
What am I supposed to be, like, the rest of storytelling that I've ever experienced is telling me that I'm rooting for Richard Dreyfuss, but he's not a good person, so I don't really want him to succeed at anything, but I don't want Bob to succeed either, so what am I rooting for?
I know our listeners are going to love me elevating Problem Child up once again.
Problem Child is awesome, and I was thinking about Problem Child the
because
whole time I was watching.
Because it was the situation where we said during that episode, even though they don't do it as effectively as they could, you understand that what they're going for with the John Ritter relationship, like him and his son, is that they need each other. He needs Junior to be less passive and to stand up for himself, and Junior needs a more positive influence so that he's not acting out and that he gets all of that stuff in check. They rub off on one another. So they rub off. Do you remember that scene where John Ritter rubs one out on the kid?
No,
hey, Junior,
bad.
Talk about a dark ending. But that's exactly what this movie needed more of, is these two characters to take something from the other, like to become a better person for having known the other character. Like Bob needs to, I don't know what the hell happens with Bob in this, because he the movie sort of forgets how neurotic he is about halfway through. Like, yes. He's a larger-than-life character, but it stops being about all his weird hang-ups and neuroses. That kind of goes out the window. And so he's I guess we're meant to understand that he's getting better, that the treatment is...
What he was missing was family, and that was what was... Yeah.
Which, that, I would have been okay with that too if that, but there's some other issues with the family that we're going to get into also that prevent that from working as effectively as it could. But yeah, that is probably one of the biggest problems. It's definitely one of the biggest problems in the film. The fact that it ends and you're just sort of like, so what this, changed here? What happened
before
here?
Before we go too far away, like you mentioned Problem Child. This is what I was thinking about the whole time was basically this was a reshuffling of characters from Problem Child, basically. So, whereas, like, basically his entire family, Richard Dreyfuss's entire family is John Ritter. Where they're like, no, just give him a chance. And, you know, Bob is the problem child.
Who gets passed from one...
And Richard Dreyfuss is the wife.
Oh.
So it's like, try to watch Problem Child with the protagonist being the wife.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And you're rooting for the kid. But in the meantime, John Ritter's doing this really awesome performance, but he's like an afterthought, really. He's just there to make this relationship worse.
Totally. Yeah, it's right. It's like the ingredients are there. They're just sort of...
Yeah, it's all the same. And in you know, kind of the way it's all just little vignettes of escalating tension. And that's, I mean, I guess that's all movies, right? It's just a bunch of
scenes. We call them scenes. Yeah, a bunch of scenes that when assembled together provide...
They form like a narrative almost. And there's like a crescendo.
You should be
near the end of it.
You should be an instructor. You should get us a short sleeve.
Listen.
People who watch movies. Watch the movies that I watch.
If you watch movies in Chicago... You know me. I'm successful.
If you've been to the Webster Place Theater, so have I. I'm successful.
What a dick.
Did you want Diet Pepsi or not? His name is Bob.
I have to say that I really think that this movie is best when viewed as a collection of delightful quotes.
Oh. Much like Napoleon Dynamite.
That really, it's much better if you just see it enough to memorize the best quotes and then use those in your daily life.
I mean, I'm not saying, I know we're getting off on a really, you know, negative.
I don't think it's negative.
No.
I think we all have positive experience. I think it's all valid.
Yeah, I do. I enjoy the movie. I'm just saying I wish the experience had been more like Bob or Leo, either one of them could have been the leads of the story and it would have worked. Like, you should have been able to side with both of them instead of kind of not really siding with either
of
them.
At least one of them could have learned something.
So another psychiatrist calls Leo to leave him one of his patients. What Leo can't see is that this guy cannot get his office packed up fast enough. Like, he's getting the hell out of there. And this is something that made me think of, because Frank Oz got his start with Jim Henson and with those Muppet movies and something like that, and this is every movie to some degree, but more so with animation and with the puppets and stuff, how meticulously all of that has to be planned out, like storyboarded and figured out beforehand, and how useful a skill like that comes in handy, particularly in comedy, like in staging stuff. And this scene made me think of that, about how visual it's, because how it's just exposition on a page. It's, you know, the actual dialogue, but it's a hysterical scene just because
really
of
funny.
The way it's staged and shot.
Just packing up the plans.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Just one more patient.
He's like, why are you retiring? He's like, we're a dying breed.
Yep. And it turns out Bob has already called Leo's office. He's already on his way for his first appointment. So Bob meets Leo. When he shakes his hand with the handkerchief, when he doesn't want to actually shake his hand, it just made me think about the last time I went home. It's so weird. I still refer to, like, my mom's as even though she's not even in the house I grew up in. Now they're in a townhome, but that's still like, oh, I'm going home for the weekend.
Well, I mean, that's mom.
Yeah,
mom
yes, exactly. Oh, she'll like that. Mom is home. Mom. So
me too.
Disregard all those stories about teenage sex.
That's not new information to her, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It's, I think, especially the older we get, I mean, it's it would probably be very upsetting to the teenagers that listen to this. And there are a few of you, and that weirds me out, but I love it. I mean, thank you, but it's
kind of... Tell all your friends.
Send me a list of the good hotels. What?
Don't go to the hotels.
I think it would frighten you how aware your parents actually are of everything you do.
When they say you're not good at lying, it's because you're not. It's because you're not.
When they say, we know you were at rehearsal and then went to Steak and Shake with your youth group, they do know that.
You are a real handful.
Yeah.
You checked in.
We got a badass over here.
I mean.
Then I knocked on their door when I came home and said, I'm home. Sweetheart, we love you.
And then you went to your diary and said, they don't know I had a milkshake after 8 p.m. Joke's on them.
I got an extra cherry with it.
Praise Jesus. Good night.
Chastity forever. Love, Donna.
Did they ever make you sign the pledge that I will never drink, I'll never do drugs?
Oh, I had that card in my wallet for years.
Oh, no!
Years.
I feel like even as an 11 or 12-year-old, whenever they handed that shit out, even as I was writing it, just knowing, like, well, this is a lie. Like, I mean, like, I'm not going to run out of school right now and do this, but never, never is a strong word, Miss Voss.
See, and I was like, thank goodness I can put it in writing.
I knew kids who used to smoke weed wearing their DARE t-shirts. Like, they would just wear them.
Well, that's delightful.
That is delightful.
Donna and I would not have been friends as kids.
No, I would have been really worried about it. It's good we met when we did and not before. I might have been a little judgy.
Likewise.
Yeah. You know, it came at the right place.
I would have been friends with both of you and none of you at the same time.
Yeah.
Because that's how I roll.
I'd have been like, do you know... Chris goes to those motels.
He signed that pledge. I saw him.
I was there when he signed it, and he has broken it. And none of the teachers are listening to me when I tell them that. They just give me extra homework and tell me to keep busy.
I keep saying snitches get stitches.
Oh, my gosh.
It wasn't that bad.
Hey, do you remember What About Bob?
Yeah. So
I have problems.
But no, listen, so the hanky. That reminded me, so the last time I went home just a few weeks ago, and I was hanging out with some of my old friends, and my friend Joe, who you've met.
Oh yeah.
Hey, Joe. He's speaking of like neurotic and a little out there. That's Joe. He would own that. He would love that I'm saying that, I think. We went out to eat, and when we were leaving, when it came time for, you know, to divide up the bill, he pulls out his wallet, but his wallet is inside of a plastic sandwich bag.
Sure.
And he unzips it, and he does his business, puts the wallet back. And I didn't say a word. I didn't even think anything of it. And then later, we were hanging out with his brother, and his brother was like, so you saw the plastic, you see this shit, you see this plastic bag nonsense? And Joe was like, I pulled it out to pay for lunch. He didn't say a word. And I just kind of felt like, I was like, Joe, I have known you for, you know, 15, 20 years at this point. There, you'd have to do so much more to surprise me. So I was thinking about Joe a lot in the first like half hour of this movie.
Just because of germs? Why does he?
Yeah, it's a real, he's got a real thing with...
It is stored at your butt. So, if there, I mean...
Gets farts on it all the time. I can see that. Guy.
I mean, or if you sat down at a chair in public, like, you know, it's in that area.
Okay, but...
Everyone sits on their butt.
Yeah, so. But, like... Okay, so you know how viruses and stuff, they can only live outside your body for X amount of time?
Yeah.
What is the shelf life on a fart?
A long time.
Well, okay, depending on the person and the fart and what you were eating and I know there's a lot of factors. But I'm saying in general, it's not like if you go out to lunch, you're not like, I am sitting on so many farts. I am sitting on so many people's farts right now. Yeah. That's just not how it works. You're not like in a cloud of farts.
I do think it stays on the CTA longer than it stays in a restaurant chair.
Well, that probably has to do with the fabric, like whatever they're lining that does just seem to retain it.
Yeah, you shouldn't maybe line public seating with like absorbent materials. Yeah, like, no. That's stupid.
I mean, I am curious. What did the last person who sat here's butt smell like? And usually I know. Yeah. I know.
Hobo.
That's hobo. More often than not. It's hobo. Yeah.
Yeah. There's two types of people in this world, Doc. The kind of people that love Neil Diamond and the kind of people who don't.
I laughed out loud at when Richard Dreyfuss breaks it down for him. I'm like, hold on. So after you've just run through this whole list of symptoms you're showing.
Oh.
You believe you left your wife because she liked Neil Diamond. Are you saying that isn't what happened?
One of my favorite things is that even though we're meant to laugh at Bob a lot of the time, you know, for stuff that in reality is actually pretty serious. It reminds me of a Farrelly Brothers movie in some ways, in the way that they on the surface sort of look like maybe they're in poor taste and they wind up being more sensitive than you had imagined, at least in this first 20 minutes or so. Again, as the movie goes on, they're less and less interested in all this. And at a certain point, it's just not a factor anymore. And then he gives him the baby steps book. And so here, start this, read through this, and I'm going to be on vacation. And so if you need anything, this is the number you're going to call and whatever. The prostitute that he gets to put on the phone to pretend to be Leo's sister, is that not Janice from The Sopranos?
There were two or three Sopranos side characters.
It makes sense. This is a prequel.
I actually was like, I bet David Chase directed
this. It's a prequel. The Sopranos, yeah.
But I like when
Leo Marvin trains Dr. Melfi.
Oh, yeah.
I like when Bob pretends to be the detective to get the address. I thought that was a funny scene. The bus driver, when he's doing his whole routine about whether or not he's actually going to get on this bus, is the bus driver, I think it's the woman from Orange is the New Black, the woman that runs the commissary. You guys don't watch Orange is the New Black? I'm just going to definitively say it is.
Well, great.
Okay, we see Leo and his family in the grocery store. Charlie Korsmo is his son.
Tiny Chris.
It's so hard to accept Catherine Irby, however you say her name, as the daughter.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because, like, 10 years from this, if even that, she's on Law and Order and, like, it popping up and, I mean,
on Oz.
I think, oh my gosh. Ooh, the things that did to me as a teenager. I will tell you what. They do not have razors in prison.
I've got to get to the sense. Field.
Yeah.
Check myself.
Emergency. In. Yeah.
This is going to be a solo session. I'm not leaving for 12 hours.
Karen. So 8 years after this, she's playing Kevin Bacon's wife in Stir of Echoes. Like, it's just so weird that she's just a young teenage daughter. And what about Bob?
Yep.
Bob arrives in town, starts calling out for Leo. I think this is one of Bill Murray's best scenes in the movie, because as he finds him and then as the scene unfolds between the two of them, he is like simultaneously, I mean, it shifts from being like, it's really funny and then it's kind of sad and then it's sort of scary. It's like one of the great things about this premise. Like we mentioned earlier, like you just a few more tweaks and this is Cape Fear. So Bob waits to talk to Leo. That's another great scene, him just staring at the clock. And this is where we find out that some of the townspeople are not so crazy about Dr. Marvin.
So the guy who runs the general store is Carmella's father on The Sopranos.
Good spot.
So I was like, there are a lot of Sopranos characters.
He looked familiar, but it wasn't even there long enough.
Well, his hair is like not totally white by then.
Yeah.
So is he the one that Leo stole the dream house out from under?
Yes.
It's him and his wife.
No, yeah. No.
You're talking about the
general store. You're talking about
the couple guy that
who runs the diner.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about.
The guy, diner?
The old couple who are always like cheering for Bob.
Right.
In the boat. And uh-huh. Yeah. That guy is Carmela's father. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh.
Well, then who's the guy who runs the general store?
It was David Bowie.
Oh.
So you didn't recognize him without the cock piece. Or what do you call it?
The cod piece.
Probably not cock piece. Oh my gosh. No. So close and so far away.
What do you call that piece that covers your cod? Please. Your cock piece.
Please don't go in stores and ask for that. You don't want to say that. I'm looking for a cock piece. No, no, sir, you're not.
You want the bathroom at the gas station.
Well, that'll be an aisle. Ew.
Okay, so Leo, we see Leo trying to teach his son to dive. Mm. This is one of two scenes where they mention that the kid is sort of fixated with death. Like he wears all black and he's all preoccupied.
I don't buy it at all.
It doesn't totally.
He seems pretty happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. My dad told me that I was very similar as a kid, though. But when I was younger, like I was 4 years old, and something happened where my dad had to explain what death was to me. Mm. And he said it wasn't in a morbid way, that I was just like, I just could not wrap my brain around it. And I kept asking him all these questions about like, well, wait, but what does that mean? And then, so what happens? And then I just had this weird fascination with it for most of my childhood, to the point where it did start to upset him a little bit, where he was starting to get concerned. But not like through black nail polish and, you know, not that, but just sort of like he has a real unhealthy fixation with this whole death thing.
I went through that like probably about six years old or five or six, where the first time you realize that the world is going to end, even though it's like,
what?
Yeah.
Oh, Donna, I'm sorry.
Youth group didn't warn you.
But here, I've got a black t-shirt.
Put on this nail polish. Yeah, the first time you realize like that the world can end, even though you'll be dead for billions of years before, you know, the sun explodes or whatever. That was the first time I ever felt like cosmically tiny. You know, it's like, what? I could die. And it wouldn't even matter. The world would just go on, and then it would die. And then what happens? I don't know. I'm six. Let's watch some more Comedy Central.
We've got our youth group. We have Sunday school with donuts.
When you die, that is not the end of you. I once saw a homeless person in a train station. There were two homeless guys, and one played a panpipe. I think I told you the story. One played a panpipe. And he had a ferret, and that ferret danced to that panpipe ever so gently, and don't like ferrets? Yeah, they are just really long rats. And he would make his money. So the other homeless guy takes a look at the first homeless guy making money from the panpipes. He grabs random paper out of the garbage and just says, "When you die, that is not the end of you." And he starts handing out the paper as like a pamphlet and getting change.
I want to know how you go from the dancing ferret to, oh, I know what my angle is.
Well, he's clearly got the song and dance routine down. I've got to hit the religious angle.
Some good counter-programming. Exactly. Yeah. It is. I mean, I don't know that I was going to say this is kind of embarrassing, but it really isn't. Like up until very recently, I would still sometimes in the middle of the night have like panic attacks about
death.
Yeah. And it's usually, you know, usually middle of the night is sort of when stuff becomes super clear. It's for me, it tends to be the time where I remember that one thing I was supposed to do that I somehow forgot all about for the rest of the day. Like it's just, there's like a clarity to that time. And it also is when I'm more inclined to have some sort of anxiety attack or get worked up about something is in those moments. And so, yeah, there have been, so I remember the first time it happened, I probably was in high school when I had like a full blown panic attack, just staring at the ceiling, like thinking about death. And then the next thing I know, I was like, wait, is that what's happening? Did I just will death upon myself?
Poor thing.
And that, yeah, it's continued to, I mean, you know, I've got, I'm well adjusted about as much as you can be, I guess, for somebody that is not particularly like spiritual and everything, but, yeah, that's a real motherfucker.
Yeah, understanding your own mortality. Yeah, yeah, it's and everyone's
at like a very young age. I don't know how young exactly, but I know I was like 5 when we moved out of this house, so I was younger than 5, and I was too big for my car seat, for like a first car seat, because it was sitting in my room. And I remember sitting in this car seat and having like a tiny little breakdown, and my mom coming to me like, what is the deal? What's going on? You were fine, just like playing, and then you're not. And I was terrified, and I was like, what if we're not real, and this is all just an angel's dream, and we don't even exist? I remember saying an angel's dream, and she was like, that's not what this is, it's okay. And she couldn't like calm me down, and my dad came in and like explained, I think, therefore I am. At that young age, and I was like, okay. And then I was fine.
Little Donna, the philosophy major. What if this is someone else's dream?
They're like, that's... Do you want some Cheerios or something?
What if we live in the blinks?
Yeah. So I think part of what was going on with all this, like the fascination with it, is when I was in preschool, one of the kids in my class and his family were killed in a car accident. Mm. And I remember them having to come in and explain, like, he's not going to be in class anymore. Ugh, and that's an awfully young age to sort of be like, I just saw this person yesterday and now he does not exist. And then from there, it was like just endless stream of like relatives, you know, dying and da da da. And I think a lot of people probably feel like you're just surrounded by this. And especially the older you get, it just becomes more and more a part of your life. And I remember when my grandma died when I was, you know, like 19 or 20. And I remember being at her funeral. And my grandpa, it was the first time I ever saw my grandpa cry and like really break down. And that upset, that is usually what upsets me the most about those situations. Oh, yeah. It's not my own, like whatever I'm dealing with. It's seeing other people I love in pain that really always, that's what destroys me. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of broke down over that. And then I remember my grandpa leaning over to me and like, you know, like putting his hand on mine. And he said like, because I was crying at this point, too. And he said, he's like, you hang in there, kiddo. This is what life's all about. And I was like, what the fuck is that? And then it's kind of fucked up that, like, the older I get, it's just sort of like, it's really shitty when sometimes you feel like you're in this pattern where you're kind of living from one crisis to the next, where it's sort of like you only see this side of your family because somebody else just died.
There are entire wings of my family that I only ever see at funerals.
Yeah. What a funny comedy, though, huh?
I love mortality.
This is where Bob shows up at the house. Leo gets him out of there by saying, hey, I'm giving you permission to take a vacation from your problems. The next scene was one of my hardest laughs in the movie, is when it just cuts to Richard Dreyfuss like posing at the mantle and then it's in his family staring at him. And it's that really long shot. Like it's a prolonged pause. And then he just goes, or I laughed so fucking hard at that.
That's good.
I feel like if we would have just gotten a glimpse that once upon a time, Richard Dreyfuss was a better person in this movie, like Leo was a better person and he got too successful.
Yeah.
Or something.
Yeah.
But it's just like, no, he was just really, he's really, I mean, good at his job, apparently, and successful, but not, he never was humble about this ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to root for him so bad.
I know.
Just to root for someone, really.
Right, like, yeah.
You're not rooting for Charlie Korsmo.
No, I find myself rooting for the rest of the family that both of these guys go away.
There's something wrong with the family, though, too. I mean, okay, so Bob returns and he has misinterpreted Leo's instructions and he's going to take a vacation there in this town with them. So he did not get rid of Bob. Anna, the daughter, gives Bob a ride into town because she's a dummy. You don't know fucking anything about this man.
Except that he's crazy. You right. know that he's crazy.
He yeah.
intense psychological help.
Yeah.
But hey, want to ride into town, person? Yeah. Just you and me in my car? My spacious car? You know plenty of room to murder me in?
You know that he...
or if you want to check into the Fairfield Inn, that's just down the...
You know that he... We have a spacious car.
Well, this... Okay, and then we get the, you know, oh, you want to go sailing with us? And so we get that scene. But this sort of goes hand in hand with Leo being so one-dimensional. Like, he's too much of an asshole right away. And his family is way too accepting of Bob right away. Yes. That's the other big problem with the movie. There's the scene after Leo realizes that Anna has gone sailing with Bob. It's the scene where he talks to her with the puppets, which I love.
It's very funny.
Did you find yourself looking at the puppets instead of the actors? Yeah, yeah, me too.
I will do that anytime a puppet is in the room. It has my full attention.
Did you see Avenue Q by any chance?
No, but I want to. My friend is in it.
So that when we saw that, I thought I was going to have that issue because it's people controlling puppets, sure. but the actors are just on stage holding the puppets. I thought, like, there's no way this is going to work. How am I? You can't. But it you do. Your focal point is just always a puppet.
You're like, ooh, puppet.
So whenever we go to, like... any type of, like, breakfast diner where there's little syrup.
Sure.
I will... Little syrup containers. I make them talk. That's just what I do. And it's, like, one of the first things I ever did, like, when I was just starting to date Amanda, I would take the things. Like, we'd go to IHOP. Remember IHOP used to have, like, the 10...
Oh, yes.
10, like, different types of syrup or whatever in a row. Like,
yes.
So I would grab them and I would just sing Be Our Guest, like, as the thing. And she's like, I'm looking at the syrup. I'm not even looking at you. Like the syrup is talking. And it's true. Like you just accept it. Like,
yeah.
This is the story I'm telling you. You have to accept this one rule. Mm-hmm. Okay, I will.
That's it.
This is the one sort of redeeming scene for Leo after this argument with Anna where he comes home and tells his wife Faye that, you know, oh, I'm a failure, both my kids just told me, you know, they hate me. And this is the only instance of him showing any indication that, like, maybe I'm not doing this correctly. Yeah. Mm. This whole father business.
Yeah, definitely not.
But Bob talks to Sigmund, the son, who playing his Game Boy, and that made me think of... Do you remember the Ninja Turtles game for Game Boy?
Not for Game Boy. No, okay. I remember for Nintendo. I wasn't a Game Boy kid. I had a Game Gear.
Oh.
Yeah. Color screen.
Yeah. What I remember about Game Gear is that I stole it from Anthony. Oops. The kid who's... God, this poor kid. That's the same kid whose turtle van I puked into.
Oh, my God.
He's also the kid that peed on me in the middle of the night and blamed it on the hamster.
Yeah.
You also peed on the floor for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah.
You peed on the wall. And
But I didn't... I didn't... What? What? Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, my first day at elementary school.
You also brewed a cup of pee tea.
That's true.
Okay, but guys, the element... The key element you're missing is that I didn't do this
on
other people. I pee on objects, okay. Usually. Right. In or on objects.
Fair, fair.
That's not fine. On human beings.
Okay.
I was peed on. Which explains my internet history.
Will.
No, what I remember about Game Gear is that thing took about like 93 batteries.
Oh my God, so many batteries.
And it lasted for about 30 minutes.
Yeah. And
I got so mad about changing out, like, you know, the AA batteries, I threw it on the ground of my basement because it was not mine and I did not respect it and I was a shitty person.
Oh my God.
I could have just returned
you
it.
You really were.
That was a dick move. But what this scene made me think of with the Game Boy was the Ninja Turtles game. The fifth and final level of it was in the Technodrome, and I really liked the music in that.
On the Game Boy, huh?
Yeah, I liked the music in that stage, and I used to, like, I remember sitting in the back of, you know, of my dad's car and, like, just putting it up to my ear and just, like, listening to the, like, staying all the way to the left of the screen so that no enemies came at me, and just, like, listen to it like it was a stereo, like, just because I really love that song.
How'd the song go?
I don't remember now. Oh. I tried looking for it on YouTube or anywhere on the internet. I couldn't find it. There's got to be a what do you call it? An emulator.
Oh yeah.
For that, I'm sure I could find it. But yeah. That also made me think of how, I don't know how you guys are with reading in cars or on airplanes. Or like,
sick.
Oh, great.
I don't do great with it, and I didn't do great with Game Boy either. Like, and that was the whole point of it. It's portable. You can take it on road trips. I remember playing that Ninja Turtles game and starting to feel sick, and I didn't tell anybody. I didn't warn anyone because I was so into the game. I wanted to, because back then you died, you started over. There were no save points. You started over. So I was really into what I was doing, and I just barfed all over my Game Boy, all over my hands, and all over the car, just because I wouldn't say, could you pull over? I think I might be, I'm feeling a little weird. It's like, who's going to defeat Krang, Dad?
The only time I ever played a Game Boy, we were playing Tetris at like a birthday party, and it was the kid's birthday party, and suddenly he just wanted to play Game Boy, so... Antisocial behavior was starting to work in really early for this kid. We played that game. It was summertime. We played that game so long that the batteries suddenly started sizzling. Like, we could hear.
Oh,
and so we're like, why is this sizzling? We opened up the pack, and it's like acid. Oh, my God.
That's awful.
Like, what?
Oh.
I didn't know batteries could do that.
Mm.
You know, when I was, must have been about 6 or 7, yeah.
I played Tetris.
You tell the best stories, Donna.
No. No.
Okay, so Bob and Sigmund sort of teach each other to dive, and Leo sees this from the house. He sees that Sigmund finally dives into the lake. He rushes down there to be like, I'll take it from here, and he pushes Bob in the lake. The family doesn't like that. So then to sort of make nice, they say, why don't you stay for dinner? Bob has 100 tiny orgasms eating that meal.
It's so funny.
It is. It's really a good scene.
That's a huge part of how I ended up watching this movie again after being a child, because I was at dinner at my boyfriend's house and the whole family starts in with this.
As a callback to What About Bob?
Yes,
or, oh,
exactly,
I thought they were just like
they were
terrible.
Referencing What About Bob and then cracking up and they're seeing the whole movie and I'm like, well, I don't know what's going on. They're like, oh my God, What About Bob? It's our family's favorite movie. You gotta watch it. And that's why.
My favorite part of it is the way like Faye has to stop herself from laughing. Like they're like fully aware that
there's a point where Bill Murray looks like he has to stop himself from laughing. Like,
yeah. Oh,
like
yeah.
Even he's like, this is hilarious.
Yeah.
I'm nailing it. Guys, hey, everybody, killing it.
Can Robin Williams do this?
This leads into the choking scene where Bob winds up saving Leo from choking, and the family rushes to Bob for saving him rather than rushing to Leo because he's okay. See, this would have been like we could have been on Leo's side here if he weren't such a shithead. Like this is one of those moments where you kind of go like,
well, because even in being saved, his response is get him off me. It's not like thank you for saving my life.
Yeah, and you only started to die because you were a hateful son of a bitch in the first place.
It's true.
Okay, so the rainstorm forces Bob to spend the night. Why is this 10-year-old boy up at 1 in the morning with them?
Mm. Yeah, shouldn't these kids have gone to bed?
It's a lot of bad parenting.
Like, just go to bed and we'll figure out Bob later. But you guys, no matter what's going on, you need to go the F to sleep.
I did like the setup that he's like, well, I'll just drive him. And his daughter's like, no, you told me to leave the car at the marina.
Yeah.
That was smart.
I was like, yeah, good setup.
Yeah.
That played back in later.
That was smart.
Go ahead.
I love when he gets so mad and he can't find his toothbrush and he's brushing his teeth.
Oh, yeah, with his finger. Well, and then in the next room, you're letting Bob, a stranger that you don't know, sleep in the same room as your son.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Again, you do know something. He's crazy.
You do know one important thing.
He's crazy.
There is
he's
part.
He's a crazy stalker.
Mm-hmm. When they're saying, this is the other thing I laughed my ass off at, where Leo tells them he needs peace and quiet.
Peace and quiet.
And then,
I'll be
quiet. And then the son goes, I'll be peace. That was hilarious.
And then
when they leave, Faye comes in and kind of tucks them in or whatever. When she leaves the room and I, for a second, thought he pulled out her panties. Like, he pulled out a pair of her panties. I think it's...
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I did not think that, because...
Just for a second, because I was like, what is he holding? He puts them right up to his face.
Yeah, and so it was a reveal that I didn't understand either, like, immediately, because I'm like, he's wearing Leo's pajamas.
Mm-hmm.
So...
What's in the pocket?
Yeah, I was like, oh, what are we revealing is in the pocket?
Faye's panties.
No, yeah, I was like, nothing.
Nothing.
Kleenex? All right, yeah. I guess. Whatever. It was a weird moment for me. But then I was like, oh, he doesn't need it. Like, he doesn't need his...
Yeah.
He's about to hold it close, and he's like, no, nah. I'm good. And that's like, oh, he's starting to change.
Yeah.
He's hanging out with small boys.
I knew that right away.
Another good message.
Oh, well, Donna's smarter than us.
Mm. Okay, so the next morning is the morning of the interview. The crew shows up, and Bob is hanging around. They say, let's get Bob in on this.
What time does Good Morning America air?
I mean, I would guess between 7 and 9 a.m.
That's about right. I think it might even be 7. Yeah, 7 to 9, 7 to 10. I think it's 7 to 9. They wouldn't get there at 6:30 for an interview at 7.
Well, why does the interview have to be live anyway? Why wouldn't you just, like, pre-record it and edit it together?
Well, they would have shot it a week ago. Wouldn't be live. They would not get there half an hour before the interview is about to start.
Let's figure this out.
So how do you want to shoot this? Because we got to do this almost right now.
Oh.
That would not have happened. And also, if Leo was having he had a feeling that Bob was going to end up, you know, sticking around, why wouldn't he just be like, you know what, can we shoot this at my office in the city and just drive back to the city?
Mm.
Well,
I mean, yeah, all that, the logic issues aside, the interview is one of my favorite scenes.
The whole movie builds up to this interview.
Yeah.
Like, that's what
to the point where it almost feels like this could have, maybe should have been more of a climactic moment, because everything after this starts to get really bonkers.
It's like
But yeah, this is Richard Dreyfuss's funniest scene in the movie, because first of all, like, the way he says boob instead of Bob, and then the whole, like, well, I don't want to call you boob, like, and just because he's trying to stay presentational for the cameras, like, the way he's holding back everything is really, really funny.
And the way he's, like, trying to stay, like, in frame and still be framed well, but he's breaking down. He plays it so well.
Yeah. So then after this, because Bob winds up being the star of the interview, Leo's had enough. He has Bob committed. I like on the ride home where he's talking to himself and, like, yelling, and it's a nice moment of, like, you know, Bob has started to become more adjusted and Leo's becoming more unhinged. But unfortunately, Bob has won over the entire staff at this hospital who think there's enough wrong with him to keep him there. Like,
yeah.
I mean, the way that they're just like, Leo, go. We're going to release him before you embarrass yourself. Like,
yeah, no.
Well, he is on vacation from his problems.
Oh, that is true. Is that their bullshit way of being like, forget that character we established?
He's fine.
This actually kind of reminded me of, this is kind of a whole genre of movies, right? Like the guy that everyone, that we know is crazy, that no one else in the movie knows is crazy, except for...
one other person, sure.
Right, like the cable guy would be like a good example, except that that's like more of a thriller, I guess it's a comedy, but... like the way that like Jim Carrey and the cable guy wins over Matthew Broderick's entire family, and he seems like the crazy one, but you know that...
Right.
That's what I was feeling with this, again, like, as the same way as I did as a kid. It's like, no, he's crazy.
Yeah.
Why can't you people see this? What is wrong with you? You're professionals in this field. You're horrible at this.
Mm.
He's a sociopath. Like, Richard Dreyfuss even says he's a classic
textbook narcissist.
Textbook narcissist. He's a sociopath. And they're really good at convincing people that they're normal, which is actually the entire crux of The Sopranos, Tony Melfi relationship, which get back into the Sopranos. This is a prequel for Sopranos. You're right.
They let Bob go. So they get back to the house where there's the surprise party for Leo.
Mm.
His sister is there. Bob suddenly is there with his arm around the sister. And this is Leo snaps. He gets in a fight with Bob. The family tells Bob, you know, hey, we're still on your side, but you should go just because he's such an unreasonable shitface. And okay. And then so this is where the movie kind of goes off the rails for me, because then Leo sneaks out of the house to kidnap and murder Bob. I do like that Bob thinks everything is therapy. Like, he's all tied up. He's like, my problems are tying me up inside, and if I don't escape from them, I'm gonna explode. Like, I do like that. But there's also the part where now Richard Dreyfuss is a murderer, and this is a Looney Tunes cartoon.
Yeah, that didn't make sense. They went too far.
Well, and then especially, like, where... So Bob escapes. He manages to get out of his bindings or whatever. And then he puts the explosives that were tied around him inside the house. So the house blows up. And then that was like, what is going on?
Yeah.
And now, and mind you, and this is when I looked down and saw that there were 2.5 minutes left. I was like, we've got a lot to cover very quickly. There's a lot that needs to get tied up. How does the movie do it? Okay, well, Leo's institutionalized. Now Leo is a cuckoo crazy pants. Bob marries his sister.
Bob marries Leo's sister, not his
own sister.
Not Bob's sister.
I mean,
it really makes him jumps, yeah.
So, Bob marries Leo's sister. I wrote in my notes, what the fuck is this? Like, how is this? This is a really icky feeling to walk away from the movie with.
Yeah.
Except that I guess it's supposed to be okay, because then at the last second, Leo snaps out of it, and his family's, oh, he's back, well, he's back. But no, still.
On top of all the stress, on top of all the stress you've been feeling for the Richard Dreyfuss persona the whole time,
mm-hmm.
not really a character, is he? He's just kind of a series of actions. At the end, he's now catatonic.
Yeah.
And the priest is saying, you know, if anyone, you know, objects to this, speak now. And he can't, and he's in a wheelchair, and he's in his pajamas, and he's at his sister's wedding. What is this? This is not the ending I you know, invested in. And you just, and now you do feel bad for him, because it's like, he wants to object, and he can't, because he's...
He's drooling, yeah. There's a close-up of him drooling. Yeah. This movie's so fucking weird at the end.
It gets so dark, and it wasn't that dark the rest of the time. It is, it's those cartoons that I'm telling you about. It's, you know, at the end of the Daffy Duck cartoon when Daffy just goes Daffy and just like runs off into the horizon. That's what this was. Yeah. That was this ending.
It's cracking up.
Like, I'm crazy now. Pajamas. Thank you, B. I was trying to have a picnic.
I just wanted a nice picnic.
Yeah.
All right. Well, final thoughts on What About Bob, Donna?
What About Bob is a delight.
What About Bob?
To watch. Don't watch it when you're a child, probably. It's too stressful.
You're a child and you're listening to this podcast.
Don't
watch What About Bob.
That is the least of your worries if you're a child listening to this podcast.
You have heard us say.
None of the words, especially youth group.
Son of a bitch! Yeah, it's a great series of delightful quotes strung together that you can use in many situations throughout your life. I sail! I want to enter a room like that every day. I sail! It's so fun. Watch it for that. It's very stressful.
That's high praise. Carlos, what about you?
This, if you watch this movie as I presented it earlier, as a series of vignettes that are very funny, it allows you to check out right when Leo breaks out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
That, and everything after that, that movie's off the rails. That movie doesn't make any sense after that. Like, it doesn't matter how crazy he's been driven to that point. Homicide has not been justified in this film, so you really don't root for him then. And that's the other point of this movie. Who are you rooting for? It's pretty much just Sigmund.
Mm.
That's it. Like, there's no one else.
What
to
a
root
waste
for.
Of. What is the actress's name that plays Faye?
Oh, I don't know.
From Airplane. So Julie Haggerty.
Yeah.
What a waste of Julie Haggerty, who is hysterical.
Yeah,
and she has maybe 5 lines in this. And nothing, and it all like just, oh, stop being so mean to Bob. I mean, that's
funny.
It.
Yeah. Something that funny. But yeah, this movie, you don't know who to root for. You're kind of not rooting for anyone. So why? Is my ultimate. It's funny.
Not what. Why?
Why?
Why about Bob?
But it is funny.
It like, is.
I don't. Yeah, that's the issue.
I mean,
it's funny, but you don't. You're not invested in a story because you don't root for anyone.
Mm-hmm. This is a tricky one because I feel this the same way. This is the first time I've watched it and felt very strongly that the ending is terrible. It's abrupt and unsatisfying. And the fact that the rest of the story, for the most part, there's some progression and escalation to it. And, that makes the ending feel even more out of place. It's so weird. It's like this, I think the script is so good in certain regards and so confusing. And others, it's a really mixed bag. Like it's weird. I wouldn't call it a bad script, even though aspects of it are terrible. Like there are some fundamental things that are wrong with the way they told this story, but there's also other things in the writing that I thought were, that I was actually impressed with. So again, this is tricky for me. I wish Leo wasn't so clearly the antagonist. Of the story, I said before, I would have preferred more of an odd couple-ish dynamic where the sympathy sort of it changes, you know, back and forth between both leads instead of one clearly being, you know, the good guy and one clearly being an asshole, which is weird that the movie identifies Bob as the good guy when I think that that's also a real gray area.
I wish Leo was more of the antagonist, I think, or this movie needed to be way darker, way earlier.
To support that bonkers ending. Yeah.
Support the last 10 minutes.
The ending is so clumsy, where it's just like, the film feels like it's scrambling to figure out something that resembles a conclusion, because it's like, time's up, we gotta get out of here.
But back up.
But it's hard, when there's no character arcs to look at, to like, to chart the progress of, I imagine it is very difficult to go like, how do we end this? They're running around the woods and he's gonna blow them up. God, that feels like a big ending.
Stump out.
It's so, it's weird, it's like, I was looking forward to watching it. I had an okay time as I was watching it. I was laughing. I imagined we were going to sit down and like think, oh, this line was funny. This scene was great. And we kind of were just like, this is just rife with bullshit. I feel kind of, it feels like the tone of this does not reflect how I actually feel about the film, which was perfectly enjoyable.
That's why I had to keep stressing, like, this is very funny.
Yeah.
I laughed out loud really several times.
Yeah.
Especially, like, near the end of the movie, like, when he's, when the surprise party and everything, I'm laughing when that's happening. Yeah. And yet, this movie is so flawed. And actually, it suffers kind of the same issue as Problem Child. The ending, it's like, what is this?
Yeah.
This is pig fart. We're out. It's the same problem.
That, you know, at least tonally, that fit the rest of Problem Child.
And that's the thing. What About Bob wasn't dark enough to support that?
So before we get out of here, Dr. Leo Marvin, what time is it?
It's time to play Who Would You Be? Who Would You F?
Did you, wait a minute, did you clip F purposely because of last week's, or the last episode?
No, I clipped it because I thought you
were self-conscious about.
Hell!
No, I stand by, that's how David Bowie would
Yeah,
it.
No, I agree.
That's how Richard Drive.
Perfect.
Real quick, guys.
F.
There it is, yeah.
F. Yeah, wow.
Yeah, that was.
F. Who would Donna be, who would she F?
Okay.
I said Donna would be. I said you. Oh boy, I said you would be Bob. That's what I wrote originally. I think you'd be Faye, and then I think you would F the director of the Good Morning America interview crew. Who's the black guy?
Okay, interesting.
Who was he also on Sopranos?
I know he's in like a gazillion. He's been in millions.
We'll get to it. You tell me who you think. This will come up again.
Okay.
I have the answer to this question.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. You would. He's in The Wire. You would be. Which means he might also still be on Sopranos. HBO knows that a lot. Mm. You would be. Sigmund.
Sigmund?
Okay. Yes. And you would F Bob. Because you're not effing Leo.
Right. Okay.
Because he would try to kill you.
Well, Chris, you're the only one who's partially right. That actor's name is Reg E. Carthy. Kathy. Reg E. Kathy. And I would B as well as F him.
Ooh, all right.
Because he is, like, the person of the most quality in this film.
Can we just take a second and acknowledge that that random poll was correct? That's fucking nuts.
I know.
That I'm right about
he
that.
He was in Tank Girl, first of all.
Oh, yeah.
That's also okay. The Wire. We'll do it, but I just want you to know that movie sucks.
It's a terrible movie. And I don't know, I might have to, like, get my girlfriends from high school in on that one.
I feel like Tank Girl and Barb Wire happen at the same time.
Tank Girl's 95, Barb Wire is 96.
Okay.
I never saw Barb Wire. No. I saw Tank Girl.
I saw the boobs. Mm-hmm. I don't know the rest of it. I know that she described the rest of that movie as being like a sci-fi Casablanca.
Mm.
She said that.
So eloquent.
She is.
But he was also Tank Girl, Pootie Tang.
Oh.
He's Freddy in House of Cards.
That's it. That's
he's in The Wire. He's in The Machinist. He was in Oz. He was in The Mask. This guy has had such an amazing career. And they're all parts and actors I would love to work with. So that's why I would be him. And there's honestly nobody really to F in this movie. So.
Yeah. Okay, so who would Carlos be in F? I said. This is gobbledygook. I said you would be Gil.
It's actually a really good choice.
And you would.
I said good morning, Gil.
And you would F Anna.
Oh, yeah, that's a good choice. Yeah, I think that you would be the angry old guy on the boat that doesn't like Leo Marvin and is rooting for Bob and letting him stay at your house. And I think you would F. Ada Turturro.
Oh. I knew you were going to say Ada Turturro.
Right. And this is a prequel to The Sopranos, and that puts you
and
right in The Sopranos.
She's the worst character on them.
Yeah, but she's
A prostitute in this, which means...
But she's totally accessible.
Experienced. Accessible.
Doesn't he also say, like, it's not you, it's me, or something?
Filthy. Yeah, he's spraying down the phone. It's not you, it's me.
Oh, boy. I would... This... I'm going to have to explain this. I would be... No. It's not dirty at all. I would be Leo.
Okay.
Oh.
Because he's incredibly successful.
Oh.
And if his family really wants Bob, they can have him. And I'll go start a new family. With normal people who are normal.
Holy fuck.
Fine. Fuck you guys.
This movie's misguided message worked for you.
He nearly died. And they were just like, oh, let's all fawn over Bob.
But what good are the spoils of that career when you're an enormous prickety prick?
Oh, I just wouldn't be.
Why fucking even play the game? I would be this guy, but I wouldn't be him.
I wouldn't be that douchey about it.
It's like in Mortal Kombat, I'd be Goro, except I'd only have two arms. We don't get to rewrite. You don't get to change who they are. Hold on.
No, I would totally be okay with being that successful. I'd be totally douchey about it.
Okay.
No problem.
You would have to extra maintenance on the beard.
Yeah.
That's going to be a part of it.
Yeah.
It's going to be a big part of it.
You got to get like a...
I need to grow a beard and then maintain it. How?
Oh, the cue. Yeah,
that's a good sound.
How are you shaving? What are you using here?
It's a future shave.
I mean, I'm relieved you don't know how to shave a face. That'd be weird, but...
But at the same time, I now would pay you $5 to watch you shave your legs just to go...
That's
how it happens.
Is it like how Olive taught you how to shave legs?
Yeah.
Oh, and I would have Anna.
Yeah, okay.
Anna. I just looked it up. She was 26 when they made this
movie. She was 30 years old,
Wow. How old is she supposed to be in the movie? We don't know. They don't ever really say.
I have to imagine she's got to be around college age because she seems
younger than her mom.
She was 10 years younger than Julie Haggerty when they made the movie. Mom's a hoe for show.
10 years old. Damn,
son. Christopher.
Who would I be? Who would I?
You would be Charlie Korsmo.
Because you are.
Because you are
Charlie Korsmo.
I was.
Nope. So
you would
nope.
Be, you would be Siggy.
R. R. Sorry. You're not, I'm sorry.
You would F Faye.
Okay.
I think that's...
I also thought you would F Faye.
I think that's obvious.
But I feel like before we've heard the excuse, you wouldn't be Charlie Korsmo because you were Charlie Korsmo.
Oh, shit, you're right.
You so that. In that, maybe you would be Bob because you like fun?
I like your reasoning, but... Okay, so Carlos is right. I would be Sigmund. I would F Faye, but not at the same time because I'm not Carlos.
Wait, what?
You're the incest guy. The how did you forget that already?
To our podcast. I mean, I'm just Chris, saying, Donna and Carlos, the incest guy.
Donna just said she would be and F the same person.
That's true.
I mean, masturbation is a that's that's a victimless crime.
Yeah, it's a victimless crime.
Me and Reggie and Kathy in my own room. Leave me be.
Well, here's the thing about the whole I don't need to be Charlie Korsmo because I was Charlie Korsmo. That, I believe, was about Hook because the relationship with the father and everything and just sort of been like, I've done this. Yeah, and I went through the whole adventure with a pirate. And,
sure. You can only do that so many times.
Yeah, I just don't need to go back there. No. So, okay. Well, that's it for us.
Wait, you did say. Sorry.
Yep. Oh, yeah, I said Carlos is right, but I would also F.
We're not used to people being right in this game.
No.
Oh, wait. No, we did establish no, that.
Yeah, fact, and I would F Faye. I was just so won over by how, like, funny and sweet and...
Have you guys seen the Ryan Reynolds movie, Just Friends?
I kind of liked her.
It's a good movie, and she's in it.
Be yourself.
And she's hilarious in
be
it.
Be yourself. Yeah, it's really she's funny. Great in it. Right. That's what I mean. You don't even need to give her a ton of screen time, and she could be great.
Let's give her a second.
All right, guys, that's it for us. Don't forget, if you're a fan of the show, rate and review us on iTunes. And if you can find a sly way of referencing one of the running jokes from the show in your review, we'll read that part of it on a future episode and give you a shout-out. You can also like our Facebook page to find out what we're looking at next and to share your own memories of these films. Follow us on Twitter at HDYRPodcast. Let us know if you have suggestions for other titles we should revisit, and we'll see you next time.